Welcome back. I'm going to spend almost this entire hour talking with my new friend, Andrea Friederici Ross, who is the author of one of the most compelling, amazing, well-researched, and beautifully written books I've come across in a long time. The title, very simple for you, Edith, The Rogue Rockefeller McCormick. Andrea, thank you for coming in. She drove in from the suburbs to do this, but
Thanks for having me. Oh, my pleasure.
I ran into you on the street. I'm standing in front of, I'm walking somewhere, and this nice woman comes by, and I go, "What are you doing?" I said, "What are you doing?" She goes, "I'm speaking at the Fortnightly Club." And I go, "Oh, wow, that's great. That's right. Was supposed to take dancing lessons when I was at Latin school and never went." And she said, "Well, I've written this book." And the book, I must tell you, is it's as good a book as I've read in a long time.
Thank you. It really is.
And the mystery to me is this woman, Edith Rockefeller McCormick. Do you know that name, Rockefeller? Do you know that name, McCormick? Is one of the most interesting people in the history of Chicago, to my mind.
Agreed.
I know you think so, too.
Yes.
And my hope is that people will read this book and give her her right place. How did you were working on a book about, and we won't give it away yet, on Brookfield Zoo when you came across her name, and you had never heard of her, correct?
That's exactly right. I grew up in the Chicagoland area, right? And went to school at Northwestern. I mean, born and bred in the area, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't until, my mid-20s, I was working for Brookfield Zoo and got the opportunity to write.
What were you doing for the zoo? Were you working for the zoo when you were writing the book?
I was the assistant to the director.
Oh,
and just
okay.
Worked on special projects.
What was the director's name?
George Rabb.
That's right. He was a great friend of Kevin Bell, the recently retired
Absolutely.
Head of Lincoln Park, who was a great friend of mine.
Yeah, long-time director at the
zoo.
And
a very admired guy, too.
Very much so, yes.
So how did the book come to you? I mean, how did...
So
you're not doing it. You're not working enough. Write a book.
No, kind of went the other way around.
Really?
Is I had heard various people at the zoo saying, you know, we really need a history book about this place. It's so interesting. And nothing existed. And so I went to George Rabb and said, you know, I'd really like to do this. And bless his heart, he said, absolutely, go for it. And
what was your background, Andrea?
It was not in writing, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I had come from the Chicago Symphony Orchestra, where I worked in the administration for a few years, and then went out to Brookfield Zoo to become his assistant and just worked on special projects. I helped design exhibits and worked on communication things and just miscellaneous things.
When he finally said yes, get to work, in essence, was that daunting to you?
No, and in fact, he didn't even hesitate. When I asked him, he said, yes, go for it.
Wow.
And I asked to be relieved of most of my daily activities so I could really focus on the past. He said, sure. And, you know, bless his heart. He put such trust in me, and I will always be grateful for
that. That's remarkable. How long did it take you?
That book, in comparison to this book, was a blink of an eye. But I have to say the research process was so different for that, right?
Because they must have had an archival setup out there.
They do. They have a wonderful archives. There was a lot of going to libraries and looking through microfilm.
that
day.
Yeah.
So this process was entirely different. But yes, I came across Edith then.
And tell people why. Tell them.
Yes.
This is among the many reasons this woman should be famous. The reason her relationship with Brookfield Zoo is...
She's the godmother.
Exactly. Exactly.
she's the founder. And it's all kind of a mystery because she was living in Switzerland. And just before she came back here, she donated land to the Cook County Forest Preserve District for the express purpose of building a zoo. And her famous line then was that we must become closer to animals in order to understand the human soul.
Yeah, that's a remarkable. That's in the book. It's underlined in my copy of this book. That jumping off point is a good one for you, but... As you write in your book, Edith, reconstructing her life hasn't been easy. It's remarkable to me how much digging you had to do about this once terribly prominent woman it stunned you, did it not?
It did, because if you go to the McCormick Family Archives or the Rockefeller Family Archives, there are boxes upon boxes upon boxes for every other family member, including the other women.
Women, sure, sure.
You know, Anita McCormick Blaine, a huge collection at the McCormick Family Archives. But for Edith, just these slim little file folders. It had all just kind of gone missing, as if she had been erased. I mean, the zoo had things, of course, that. But so this process became, it was like a scavenger hunt.
Yeah, I'll bet.
You know, it wasn't all in one place. And actually, in retrospect, I think it made it more fun, because I love a good scavenger hunt. I love a good puzzle. And, you know, finding one letter here at the University of Chicago, or finding one letter here at, you know, the Skokie Historical Society, it was like a real treasure.
Well, you write in here, and one of the reasons, a compelling reason, Chicago should know this patron saint, this enigmatic woman who helped elevate the city from the stockyards and industry to one rife with cultural and artistic organizations. What's your theory, Andrea Ross? Why was this woman buried?
Excellent question. Well, first of all, in her lifetime, she was very much put in a box.
Yeah. Well, that was a problem with women at that time.
It was a problem with women
absolutely.
At the time. And
sure.
I mean, if she had been a male Rockefeller, we would all know her name. If she had been a male McCormick, we would all know her name. But she wasn't. And a scholar assessing her library after she died, a library of 16,000 volumes, came to the conclusion that because she was born a Rockefeller, she missed a great academic career.
That's right. She did not have, she was tutored, basically.
She was tutored.
Yep.
Right. And actually, her great education came later in life when she went off to Switzerland.
When she became a do-it-yourself analyst.
She did.
Learning from the guy who invented psychoanalysis.
Right.
It is just a remarkable book. Andrea's going to be on until about 10 to, and we will talk about many of the things she did that have to do with opera, that have to do with Carl Jung, that have to do with an ongoing. The other one of the tragic things is this ongoing lawsuit that she had with her and not too greatly admired husband. We will be back. The name of the book again is Edith. The author is Andrea Friederici Ross. She has her own website, as all authors should. I'll spell it for you, and plus we'll have it on the website. We'll be back. Welcome back. We're talking about the fascinating life of Edith Rockefeller McCormick. I suppose you do recognize that name, Rockefeller, and I'm hoping you recognize that name, McCormick. This marriage that she had with a man I'm not fond of after reading Andrea Friederici Ross's wonderful book, The Good Old Harold. It was the son of Cyrus McCormick, who invented the Reaper. And she was the daughter of John Rockefeller, a strange man on any level, but a business genius of sorts. She had as privileged a life as could be imagined. Correct.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes. It is said that when she married Harold, you know, it was Prince of McCormick Harvester marries Princess of Standard Oil.
Sure.
That was,
sure.
You know, those were
sure.
the headlines. And it was thought that she would become the richest woman in the United States
yeah.
at that time.
Yeah. Wow. Meaning what? Meaning how much money?
The papers speculated $35
million. Which, translated to today's money, makes her like, you know, Jeff Bezos or somebody. were they in love?
I think they were.
Initially.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. And I actually think that Edith loved Harold all her life.
Really?
I think that never went away. So she met Harold because her father set up a private school for Junior, Edith's brother, and two of the young men who were signed up and were granted access were Harold and Stanley McCormick.
Right.
So she knew him from, you know, teenage years on. He was kind of a member of the family. Mm. And Harold was charming. I think if he walked in the door right now, you and I would like him very much.
Oh, good. I'm glad to hear that.
I think he was a warm, engaging, happy person who wanted happiness in life.
You know, one of the things that haunts me a bit about their relationship is the what happened to their kids.
Yes.
You know, and I think that would, you know, it could be happening now with COVID and all that stuff. But I can't imagine things, the death of one's children helping a relationship at all.
So they had five children.
Yeah.
Two of them died quite young. The firstborn, who was John Rockefeller McCormick, he died at the age of four of scarlet fever.
Right.
And then a few years later, a little girl, Editha, died before the age of one. She had been very sick from birth.
But the death of that son inspired this remarkable woman to do what?
Yes. So she and Harold founded an Institute for Infectious Diseases here in Chicago.
Yeah.
And it was at that institute that they discovered the strain of streptococcus, if I'm saying that right, that causes scarlet fever. And they developed a skin test. And then we're working on a vaccine for it as well. Mm. So they actually helped curb scarlet fever because of Baby Jack. They also endowed the Journal for Infectious Diseases, which still exists and is still vitally important in the field.
I'm just going to throw it over. Opera.
Yes, opera. Edith and Harold were among a group of city leaders who helped found a resident opera company here in Chicago in the early 1900s. Arthur Meeker, who wrote frequently, he was, you know, inside circle and wrote frequently about Chicago society. He said that the McCormicks gave Chicago opera on a scale similar to 18th century Europe, the royalty in 18th century Europe. They funded it, basically. Sometimes they fronted all the ticket revenue for the year, sometimes to the tune of hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Yeah, I get the sense that what I know of John D. Rockefeller, this was not a good guy, I think. And I can't imagine that he was a good father. Mm. And I have the feeling from reading your book that he and Edith had a rocky relationship.
They did. So I think actually when the children were young, that he was a loving father.
Doting, yeah. Yeah.
Actually quite playful, which surprises a lot of people.
Yeah.
But always on his terms. But then as Edith's beliefs began to grow away from his were very Baptist. His were very, very firm. There was no doubting his beliefs, and she did. So as she grew away from the church and she developed her own ideas about things like psychoanalysis about opera, he never would have approved of opera, right? I mean, that was forbidden in their house.
Not in his ballpark, yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Right. He and Junior were all about funding medicine and education in those early years. Junior would later branch out to a lot of things.
Sure.
And Edith was all about culture. It was a big difference.
Why?
She thought...
I know, I'm asking you to sort of psychoanalyze Edith Rockefeller McCormick, but why? I mean, she certainly grew up around in places where there was, at least on the surface, a lot of art and culture, but why was it so important to her, do you think? Was it a way to express herself?
Maybe. Well, I do have to say that Edith was not very comfortable in the realm of feelings.
Mm-hmm.
Edith was very intellectual and very comfortable in debating ideas and furthering her own thought process. She was very uncomfortable with emotion.
Hmm. Hmm.
And maybe opera was one acceptable way of exploring that. I also think, actually, she became an analyst. She became a Jungian analyst.
Yeah, I know. She had a group of, you know, a few dozen, I think, if memory serves, a few dozen clients.
Yes, and I actually think she might have been quite good at that, and that it was a good role for her, because she was probably not the type of person who sat down with her her gal pals and had a heart to heart.
Yeah. How are you feeling, dear? Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
This was somebody sitting across from her and opening up their innermost thoughts to her, and she didn't have to reciprocate.
Right, right.
What a perfect setup.
What drew her? Tell people what drew. When she was drawn to Jung, he was not at the height of his notoriety and or fame. He was just a doctor with what some people thought were crazy ideas.
Yes, and I actually believe that Edith is one of the reasons that we know his name today. She helped fund a lot of his translations.
Mm-hmm.
She provided a physical location for his psychological club where people could meet and share his ideas and have lectures and a library and so on. And then she helped further his ideas here in the United States as well. But what drew her there was from her teenage years, as all of her siblings also, she had a lot of nervous disorders.
Yeah, yeah.
Growing up in the Rockefeller house was not easy. I mean, your father is the most hated man in the United States.
Yeah, exactly.
And when that sinks in, and when you realize there are death threats and, you know, people camping out on your front door asking for money and all of that, that it is said that in 1 month, the children tallied up the letters of request that came in that month, and it totaled 50,000. So that's the outside world,
yeah,
right? And she grew up really afraid of that, I think.
Who can blame her? Could you blame her?
No.
I can't either.
No. And then she has these two children die young.
Mm-hmm.
And at that same time, think about what's happening in the world,
yeah,
right? McKinley is assassinated.
Mm-hmm.
We've got the Tarbell series,
right?
Which is lambasting
right.
John Dee and the entire family. We've got the Titanic sinking. We've got the theater fire here in Chicago. It's just one disaster after another. It's a scary, scary world. So she ends up going to Zurich and being analyzed by Carl Jung. She intends to go for a few months. She comes back 8 years later.
Well, we will get to, after the break, I want to get to James Joyce. I want to get also to, I think that Edith has inspired you. And you, why do I think that? Because you write that she does in here. And I think that's a very, very interesting thing, mm-hmm, too. And, you know, for a young woman like you to come upon this undeniably fascinating character, but also this kind of role model. Am I making too much of this, Andrea?
I've never heard the phrase role model before in that
yeah.
respect, but that's an interesting idea.
I think there are a lot of people in Chicago, too, that if they think of Edith Rockefeller McCormick, they think of her attached to the word kooky, and I just don't understand that. Why do you think that may be?
Because scandals sell.
Yeah.
And her family had so many scandals. I mean, you know, pick and choose. There are so many. I mean, front page news all the time.
Yeah.
Right? Because that's great sport.
Sure.
Right? But talking about her intellectual beliefs, yeah, not really so interesting.
Yeah. Unbelievable. We have to take a commercial break, and we will be back to talk about the fact that if you have ever tackled Ulysses, you may owe a bit of that arduous, but rewarding task to Edith Rockefeller McCormick. We'll be back. As Andrea Friederici Ross writes in her remarkable book about Edith Rockefeller McCormick, titled Edith, that she... I want to find this. Oh, here it is. Where is it? At the end of her life, faced with disasters on all sides, familial, financial, medical, social, Edith somehow managed to remain optimistic. You know what? Want to know why she did? Because this is kind of her, and you capture it here too, Andrea, her life philosophy. Quote, "No one is too rich nor too poor, too nobly born, nor too humble to escape responsibility for living to the fullest every hour of his life, living not only physically through care of one's health and the fullest development of one's strength is one of the first rules of life, but living spiritually, socially, intellectually, and honestly, the duty of every individual." That's remarkable. Just for that, this woman should be world famous.
Boy, it's really hard to do, though, right? To live up to that.
Wow. Yeah, it is hard to do, but it's not that hard to aspire to.
That's true.
Yeah, I'm not sure I can make it, but you have done just a remarkable job of reconstructing her life, and we started this conversation about the difficulties of doing that. You must feel a real kinship with this woman, dead as she may be, but a real kind of kinship, yes?
Well, that's interesting because we actually have very little in common, don't we?
Of course,
we?
No, sure, sure,
right?
Sure.
I mean,
sure.
Crazy. But I think that I think she inspires me in various ways.
Yeah.
I mean, first of all, I started out writing historical fiction about her and was writing about her just because I thought she was quirky and, wow, what a great character, you know, and all this. And then the more I researched, the more I realized what a bad deal this woman got in her lifetime and afterwards, you know, that she was, all of the press she got was always, you know, scandal after scandal, and kooky Edith, and, you know, even in the biographies of other family members that you see nowadays, it was always kind of, you know, she was a black sheep.
Yeah.
But you, when you read her writings and you see what she was trying to do, there's a lot more to her.
Even in the end, I mean, when she was at Graceland at first, she was apart from the family.
She still is apart from the family.
She was further apart initially, right?
Yeah, she was in the vault for a long time, I think. Yeah, for decades. But now you can find her grave at the side of a little lake.
That little with
her two infants, young children who died young. And then across the lake is the whole big McCormick clan, which goes on for quite some time. So I feel like it's kind of a metaphor, though, for how she lived her life, even. Mm-hmm. She wasn't really a Rockefeller, and she wasn't really a McCormick in the end. She was Edith.
Yeah. And the other thing she was a girl at a time when, yes. She also started the women's... World's Fair. I mean, that's something that I knew a little about it, but didn't know how big a part she was of that.
Yeah, so she didn't start it exactly, but she was on the board.
Right, she was on, yeah, right.
And she was always advertised as the keenly intellectual member of the board. But yes, so one of the things that really interests me about Edith is her evolution as a woman. Because she starts out as a young married woman really believing that her role as wife and mother is what it's all about.
Yep.
And she writes pieces for, you know, women's magazines saying, you know, the four foundations of womanhood. First, you take care of your husband, then the home, then the children, and last of all, yourself. But after her time with Carl Jung in the 20s, she comes back. She starts her own real estate business.
Exactly.
She's part of the planning for the Women's World Fairs. She starts speaking out about women. And it's an entirely different tone. Now, of course, women in the meantime have won the right to vote.
Vote, yes.
They and it's a very different landscape.
Well, in many ways, it was a good time for her. But in many ways, it was a lousy time, too. It really, really was. Her relationship with the overrated novelist James Joyce.
Yes. So while she was in Switzerland being analyzed, she was always about elevating culture. So here in Chicago, she supported young artists, composers, and so on. So she continued that same thing in Zurich and underwrote James Joyce for 18 months as he was writing a little piece called Ulysses.
How did they get together? How did she discover him or he discover? More of the point is, how did he discover her?
Well, actually, I mean, she was all about doing things anonymously.
Yeah.
She tried to be an anonymous donor whenever possible. It was not about name recognition. In fact, when she gave the money for Brookfield Zoo, they talked about calling it the McCormick Zoo. But, you know, she didn't want that either. So what she did want,
to these days and Ken Griffin.
Well, right. And plenty of other names you can mention.
Yes. Oh, yes.
But she did. She was a tremendous collector of objects, priceless objects. And her mansion at 1000 Lakeshore Drive, her plan for that, as well as her estate up in Lake Forest, was to turn them into museums after her death.
Mm.
So she wanted the Rockefeller McCormick Museum of Chicago and the Rockefeller McCormick Museum of Lake Forest. And if that had come to be, we would all know her name.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Why didn't it come to be?
It didn't come to be because she was basically penniless when she died.
I know.
And all of
her items. How does that happen? People are now saying, wait a minute.
Yeah. So she started this real estate business. Yeah. Well, three.
She became an analyst.
She became an analyst. She came back. She got divorced from Harold because he wanted to marry a bad opera singer.
What was her name?
Ganovalska.
Yes, I know. I've heard of her. She's more famous than Edith Rockefeller McCormick. I'm serious. I know, which is really sad.
Well, that love triangle was the basis for the love triangle in Citizen Kane.
Right.
Wealthy man.
Yep.
Marries bad opera singer.
Mm-hmm.
And, tries to buy her roles. But so anyways, the divorce settlement was awful for Edith. That was a financial blow to her. Then she starts this real estate business, tremendously successful, Kren and Dado. They sold lots to 16,000 Chicagoans over the course of just a few years. They grew rapidly. But then 1927, the real estate market starts to dip. 1929,
everything starts to dip. Yeah.
She's left with all of this. Nobody can buy it. So those two things, and then she dies in 1932, having not been able to recoup any of this. The other interesting thing is that her father outlived her. Right?
That's right.
So
that's right.
Think about what might have happened if he hadn't.
Whew. Wow. Yeah. Wow, it is just a remarkable story. Again, the title of the book is Edith, the Rogue Rockefeller McCormick. And what's this cover photo?
The cover photo is Edith standing on Michigan Avenue. You can see the Drake Hotel in the background.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, across from the Drake Hotel to the west would have been Edith's mansion, at the corner there.
Only one block from the Fort Knightley where you and I where you and I met. The book is also lovely, beautifully illustrated, I think. Here I just turned to Ganowalska, weird opera singer.
It actually pained me to put her picture in there. Yeah. It is interesting that you and I bumped into the street right outside Edith's old house.
No kidding. I think it's wonderful.
Right?
I think it's wonderful. Yeah.
And I was there because I was doing a program with Ellie of Ellie Presents.
Right.
I've paired up with a historical interpreter.
And I'm going to have her. I'll be writing about, look in your Chicago Tribune or subscribe to the Tribune, and you will be reading a story about my story about this book and about Andrea and one of these days about Ellie, who does these, because you're both friends with Richard Lindbergh, I think. And he's wonderful, wonderful booster of all things Chicago.
Yes.
Who published your Brookfield Zoo book?
The Chicago Zoological Society. Okay. They have their own publishing arm because of all the magazines.
Sure.
And so on.
This book, Edith, the Rogue Rockefeller McCormick, is published by Southern Illinois University Press. How was that experience? In a sense, you were a first-time author there, even though you have the Brookfield Zoo book. What was that like?
You know, it's been fantastic.
Good.
I can honestly say that at every step in the process, they made this book better.
Wow.
And I don't know many people who can say that about their publishers, but fantastic.
And it was published, it was published during the pandemic, too, which is, you know, when things have really opened up, I'll have you back on. But right now, you know, during the pandemic, you don't have to just continually watch Netflix dramas. You can go to Andrea's website. We will have it when I repost this show. And I think Jack may have it up there now, but certainly by Tuesday, I'll give you a link to her website because you're not going to run away and get a pen now. It has been an incredible delight to get to talk to you. And if I could be any more lavish about my praise for the book, you'll read about it in print.
Thank you so much, Rick.
Thanks for driving in. I'm glad you like the studio. And I will not even ask you what your next book is going to be about, but I hope it's about some kind of other hidden woman because I want these people to come out from the history's shadows.
You might be in luck.
Good. Safe travels home.